Welcome to Keeping It 99, your one-stop shop podcast for everything in the world of heavy metal, rock and roll in Northeast Ohio. Sometimes none of that. Today, a lot of that. We're still on this nostalgia kick. Season 5, a lot of nostalgia Cleveland stuff. We did the Peabody's episode. We did the Crypt Kicker episode. Today, I got Daly Davis. He's a front man. He's been a merch man. He's been the security man. Probably sold you a shirt and then kicked your ass out of shows. Over the past, you know, couple decades, man, you can see Daly all around the Cleveland scene, just being a part of it. And I got to know him like a year and a half ago. We talked about Ringworm on the show. We did the Localized episode. It was a great time. He's a handsome devil. Absolutely gorgeous. And it was great to have him on. He's got way more insight on these projects. Today we're talking about Jason Popson, frontman of Mushroomhead, 216. State of Conviction. We talk about it. We play a little bit of Jason Popson bingo today, where, you know, he lists five bands, I list five bands. We see if the projects match up, and it's really a cool time. I'm going to warn you right now, though, this episode is so fanboyed out that I don't know what else to call it other than two dudes nerding out over another dude for like an hour 20. So it's wholesome. It's wholesome as fuck. Because we talk about a cool motherfucker in Jason Popson, and I've been talking about Popson forever on this show, for the past 6 years on this show, as my favorite frontman. Hell, let me just play you a little clip from a few years back.
Yeah, if anybody doesn't know, if you're not aware, I like J-Man. I think he's pretty awesome.
Aren't you guys best friends?
Not yet.
Close.
He hasn't wrote me back.
Dear Slim, I wrote you, but you still ain't calling.
I'm gonna drive off a cliff right now. Dear J-Man,
I wrote you, but you still ain't calling. Yeah, we should do that. Let's make that a song.
It's me again, hope it's no bother. I'm just writing you now to let you know I'm about to be a father. It's my third kid, but my first daughter. And guess what we're gonna call her? That's right, we're naming her J-Man. And once again, you're as cool as cool can get. And I know we could be good friends, yes, and I know we never met. But even with my kids and my lovely wife, if you could write me back, that'd be the best day of my life.
Caressing the downfall, outstretched arms on your knees.
I'm a player, the Mac, the mayor, the funky rhyme sayer. Sick your teeth and decadence, manipulate the crowd. Drink the wine and toast us off, or we will take you down. In time it will fall. The structure of struggle, backs against the wall. Now turn it around. Oh, and congrats on having yourself a new child. Kid, I got Rembrandt as my right hand, Solo as my pilot.
That's funny.
So that's the kind of relationship I have with J-Man. Is that
secret and stalky?
Yeah.
I love you, Jamie.
I think he's cool with it. I think it's cool with it.
He gave me a Bud Light once.
Yeah. I'm not allowed within 50 feet, but
it's all good, dude.
It's all good.
It's all good.
216.
If he's by a school, it's 100 feet.
So, yeah, they're a big fan. There's some music played. There's maybe a clip or two from past episodes referencing Jason Popson. With this show being what it is, I mean, yeah, it's predominantly a metal show, but we do like to, you know, we throw concerts, we throw events and stuff, and you really, really like putting out the Northeast Ohio scene. Look, there's more metal bands in Cleveland than any other city in the country. Akron 17. So Northeast Ohio, that Rust Belt, dude, like, there's so much good stuff, and Jason Popson is such a huge part of that for the past 30 or so years. Just, you know, selling out different clubs with every different project. And I think between him and Jim Kanya, You know, I think they were the biggest influence on me and a lot of people for sure within the Northeast Ohio metal scene. And even if like Mushroomhead isn't your bag, there's something that this guy has done or been a part of, every little subset, every subgenre. And so since our audience tends to be Northeast Ohio metal musicians, this one's definitely for you, man. Dig it. Let's just get into it.
Ladies and gentlemen, from the heart of the heartland, it's time for Keeping It 99.
What up, everybody? Today I am joined again. This is the second time having you on the show by the one, the only, my twin brother. It's like I'm staring into a mirror right now. I'm here with Mr. Daily Davis. And we are talking today, we're getting into fandom here. This is a thing about a guy that I would dare say is like, I was told, I recently interviewed a guy that we both know named Dan Call. And he called Jason Popson the Mike Patton of the Cleveland scene. And that
I agree with that.
I was like, I've always had that comparison in my head to Jason Popson too, especially when it comes to being just a fan of musicians and singers. Right. My fandom for Mike Patton, very high. My fandom for Jason Popson, as recorded over the past 6 years of doing this podcast, equally as high.
Right.
I can't say enough good stuff about the stuff that this guy does. Now, if for those that don't know, if we're fresh to the show, Jason Popson, also known as J-Man in Mushroomhead, that's what his most notable work most people would recognize, especially outside the Cleveland area. He's the metal rapper guy in Mushroomhead. You know, you go back to one of the greatest albums of all time, Super Buick. You know, he's the Greedo died by the hand of Solo dude. He's one of the most charismatic performers I've ever seen in my life. And not only that, he's done so much for the Cleveland heavy metal scene over the decades by producing bands such as 216, which, you know, you'd think 216, that's the Cleveland area code, like 100% a Cleveland guy. He's one of the reasons that I fell in love with local metal, because he brought a sense of community and scene to the scene that I never felt like a part of before. And then I go and I see bands like 216 playing with Runt and Schnauzer and some of the best shows that we've ever fucking experienced. Now, I know you have more of an actual kind of relationship and a lot more experience seeing Jason Popson than I do. I'm coming from the kid down in Akron that just grew up a fan that had posters of this guy, the Mushroomhead calendars. You know, right.
I had those when I was a teenager for sure. Absolutely.
And, you know, when I first saw Mushroomhead perform and I saw Jason Popson being surrounded by half naked women and Roxy jumping on him, and so I was like, that's the guy I want to be. That's
right. I think everybody wanted to be that guy in the 90s. You know what I mean?
So here's the thing about Jason Popson when it comes to me and the fandom is that he's got so many things, so many projects that it's hard to do a ranking system. And I know you, knowing his bands definitely better than me, also have the same kind of respect for the guy and the same kind of love for the music, the actual music that the guy's produced. And so I wanted to do something fun for this show, since it's a Northeast Ohio metal show, and do a little bit of J-Man bingo today with Daily Davis, where we're going to pick five bands. I don't know what your bands are. You don't know what my projects are. And we're going to see if any of them match up, because, I mean, we are very similar in taste. So I have a feeling like there's going to be at least three.
I'd say so.
I think we're going to go with three. And so what we'll do is I'll start it off with a J-Man band and to see if this matches up or not. And then
first, you. Let me ask one question. Absolutely. So are we doing projects outside of Mushroomhead, right?
You know what? It's up to you. I don't have Mushroomhead on my list.
Me either.
Let it sit on its own island. Because, you know, Mushroomhead at some points didn't have Jason Popson. But we'll put Super Buick into that whole, all the J-Man, that we'll put it on its own. Yeah, I do not have Mushroomhead. So we will exclude them from this game.
Here's a band that I think is on our list. All right, Daly, I'm pretty certain that they're on your list. And I'm just going to say it's 216.
Absolutely. Yeah, for sure. Yeah. 216 is probably one of those bands that there's a lot of bands that I really liked, like growing up, that only had like one or two albums, especially locally. But like, it's a tragedy that 216 only has one full length album. Right. Like, you know what I mean? And they recorded a couple other songs, if you're lucky enough to download, you know, like off the internet or whatever, at compilations or on the MR, you know, the Mushroomhead, the Shroomhead Incorporated, you know, thing back in the day, and, you know, stuff like that. And then the Kingsbury Run, like if you're lucky enough to get those CDs, you had those other songs. But 216 definitely is one of those bands that has to be on this list because they literally stood alone on their own. 216 shows had almost sometimes a half the crowd would be not even Mushroomhead fans. They had their own metal fan base. They had their own other fan base. People would be like, I only go to 216 shows. I don't even go to Mushroomhead shows. And they're their own, they were their own entity for so long. And for them to still be able to sell out Peabody's after on one CD release 10 years after it came out, that just speaks for itself. 216 has to be on this list. Absolutely.
216 had a formula to those eight songs on that the album that you're talking about. It was, I think it was called Step Up, right? That was the name of the record. Or was it just 216?
It's just 216. Yeah.
Okay. So on that record though, there was a formula that I noticed in I think seven of the eight songs, and it was, it opens up very heavy. Then you get your verse, you get your chorus, you get the same verse again. It's not a second verse lyrically. Popsin was really good at this, at writing one like eight bars or 16 bars that he could fucking repeat. And by the end of this first time hearing it, you memorize the song.
Right.
And there's a catchiness to his flow. Like he would sing in 216. It was, you know, it was very growly, but it was like almost like a hip hop cadence. Right. And so yeah, very, you know, it's very bouncy, but the chorus would rip the verse again. Now you're singing the same lyrics because it was like from Step Up to 10 Fingers, you know, it was just on a repeat. And then it would just end with some badass, like something right, badass, like, oh, rip it up and then done.
Right.
That's a formula that I think is like perfect for pitting. 216 is a perfect mosh pit fucking band.
Violent mosh pit too.
and it's pretty crazy, especially when you hear how, like, you know, more melodic and different like Mushroomhead is. Everybody in 216 at some point was in Mushroomhead.
Yeah.
And so yeah, like, you know, I think it's my favorite work that Skinny's ever done. You know, is it the double kick, just his double kick work, his footwork on that record is absolutely awesome. Right. But yeah, like the live, like to me, they're the ultimate metal live band.
So good. Every show. Amazing. Every show. The show was fun. It was laid back. Because I had the pleasure of obviously, you know, doing merchandise for them as well during my Mushroomhead merch days. And like, it was my favorite show to work because I had a couple t-shirts instead of a whole, you know, Hot Topic. It was laid back. We had less gear. We loaded in. There was only four band guys, four or five crew guys at the most. It was the most chill. We would go to like Flip together. We'd go to Fort Wayne, Indiana together. And like, all those little mini van road trips were the best because it was just, I'm not saying that Mushroomhead was like, you know, I mean, there was always chaos from the beginning of the day to the end of the day to the show was chaos. Mm-hmm. 216 is like the most laid back show. Like, I loved working those. I'm like, we have five 216 shows this summer. Sweet. Like, we just laid back. It was fun. Everybody loved it. You know, you'd go to other cities and play, and like, sometimes people wouldn't even know. Like, I remember one time we played Grand Rapids and like E-Town Concrete, and like E-Town Concrete had toured with Mushroomhead earlier, you know, back a couple years before. And then we did that show there, and those dudes were like, these guys look familiar. And they're like, wait a minute, it's the Mushroomhead guys. You know, they didn't even know. They just knew this band 216 was headlining, and they were opening up, and they got a date on their tour. And like, E-Town Concrete fans got it. They were into it. You know what I mean? And then these two people who knew who Mushroomhead was and knew 216 was a side project, they were there. So it was a really cool to see that crowd, because a lot of people at first had no idea who this band was. And they're like, these dudes rip. And they're like, oh, yes, yeah, Mushroomhead guys. And like, what? You know, so it was really cool. They stood on their own, man. Like, people didn't have to know it was a Mushroomhead side project, and they still bobbed their head to it. Yeah, it was. And it was just the coolest most laid back stuff. I'm so blessed that I had a chance to go out with those guys and do a bunch of their like regional gigs, because man, there were some of the best times, some of the most fun I've ever had on the road with those dudes. Seriously.
Dude. Hell yeah. I had a sneak. I was like, 216 is definitely.
Oh yeah. Gonna absolutely. Be what. And I don't know if you know, the origin of that band actually is Mars Studio in Streetsboro, where a lot of the famous like Integrity Records, Ascension, Ringworm, a Mushroom Head early albums were recorded at. Bill Kerecki got a new board and he called Steve Felton Skinny and was like, hey, I want to test out this board. So Skinny got some guys together and went out there and 216 got written. That's how 216 got written. It was literally just on the fly, wrote some riffs.
Yeah.
Skinny, his brother, was like, Dave, come out. They tested the board, wrote some songs. Boom. There you go. That's how 216 happened. And the picture on the 216 album cover is actually a picture of the Mars recording board, the console, is what that is.
Oh, wow. So, yeah,
a little piece of history for you. So that's how 216 was born on accident.
Well, that's awesome. All right. Yeah. All right. You go ahead. Give me a second band on your list and see if I match up with you.
Another band that Jason Popson has a knack for doing, putting out an album with, and you want more, State of Conviction.
State of Conviction. Now, State of Conviction is not on my list. However, it was a toss up between them. I had three bands as my fifth on there. Okay. And I am very hip to State of Conviction. In fact, I probably listen to State of Conviction more than I listen to the other Popson projects now, because it's on Spotify.
Right.
All right. So What is it about State of Conviction that you love so much?
It literally is one of my favorite records of all time, A Call to Arms. Like, yes. I'm not just not like local or like Popson, like overall, like it's on my top 10 album list. Because of the fact it also has another cool story was Dwight from Integrity invited Jason to play a show with him. I'm pretty sure it's how it went. And he was like, pretty sure DeWitt was the one that confirmed this for me. He pretty much told Jay and Martini that he's like, you guys can play a show with me, but you guys can't play your funk rap band unified. Like, you guys have to make it like a hard band. So like, yeah. they made State of Conviction pretty much so they could play with their hardcore friends. And to me, it's definitely one of Cleveland's coolest hardcore albums. And it's raw. It's real honest. It's really pissed. You know what I mean? And those tunes are some of the most coolest songs. Like structure-wise, and Craig Martini is just an amazing musician. He's an amazing human being, great friend of mine. Love the guy with all my heart. And his bass tone, just the tone of that album is so fucking raw and brutal. And it's like not overproduced. I just like how raw it is, man. Like, you know, and I'm a big fan of the old raw hardcore albums. And that's just, to me, it caught a sound. And it didn't sound like all the other bands in that era. But it definitely was a part of that mid-90s hardcore metalcore Cleveland sound, and literally, like, every time I hear it, it just takes me back to a time in life. You know what I mean? Like it's a memory lane for me, and I just love it, man. With the samples, with the Manson samples, and all the Natural Born Killers sample. I mean, it has an attitude, it has a personality, and it's just from beginning to end. I mean, it's too short. And I wish it was an hour instead of 30 some minutes long. You know what I mean? Like,
oh yeah, I remember seeing Unified Culture at one show, and they ended up like JJ ended up coming out and they did some State of Conviction stuff and totally changed the entire atmosphere. I think on that album, when you're talking about Craig Martini, who's easily, it's hands down my favorite local bass player of all time. Like when it comes to the music scene, listen to In God We Bros.
Yeah. Oh dude. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's the personality, dude. You know what I mean? And it's just bouncing. You're talking about bouncing. Like when that In God We Trust starts, dude, like if you don't bob your head, you don't have a fucking pulse. You know what I mean? Like you're not alive if you're not bobbing your head. Seriously.
So yeah, I heavily recommend people go listen to that stuff, because like I said, I still listen to it. I still listen to it quite a bit. Like a lot of those songs are on a lot of my playlist, and yeah, it's groovy. I love that you gave the origin story of that one too, because that was always my thought, was that it's unified culture, but it's a hardcore version of unified right. culture.
Yeah.
All right. So I'm going to get to my next band. We'll just get this one. Mine is Unified Culture. And it's on. Santana, Mother Goose, won't step from the noose. If it don't move fast, but we'll get loose. Gotta take a hold of hell, I can't let it. Gotta get up and jump to the pump. I'm pumped, call the setup. Put up with the way that the runner thinks I'm because a great girl, they got them on and other things. I'm on the same time. Look about another screams a baby time. But you tell me who decides who draws the line on life. We're coming up quick, stick and move. Do what you gotta do. Do what you gotta do. Prove what you gotta prove. Quick, stick and move. Do what you gotta do. Do what you gotta do. Prove what you gotta prove. Coming up quick, stick and move. Do what we gotta do. And do what you gotta do. Are they on,
it's on my list as well? Of course, yeah. They have to
awesome.
Be. I mean, they're great.
They are. They are like a harder Red Hot Chili Peppers almost. There's right. this. There was a wave in the early 90s of white boy funk. There was just like bands that were, you know, it was a style. And was that Popsin's like one of his first, at least, like, I mean, it was pre
his first band. Yeah. It was his very first band. Yeah. That was his first step onto the stage. And I don't know if you've ever heard any of the old like demo cassette tapes and stuff, but that band was, like you said, it was very Chili Pepper at first, and then it really progressed. And then, like, you know, they put out a disc, and it's like, I don't know if you've ever heard those old tunes. If you get a chance, you can like look a lot of that stuff up on YouTube and everything. I have the old demo tapes, because that's who I am. I collect everything. But like, you could hear it was his first band. You know what I mean? You could hear the first bandness of the album, and then they progressed as a band. And like, they're just some of the best players, man. I mean, they just literally like that album. I mean, they're a great band. I mean, and it's like they stood the test of time too, because every Unified Culture show I saw throughout the years, it's got better and better and better. And just, they're great. Like you said, man, they're just a heavier Chili Peppers, man. They're funk. They are Cleveland's funk band, in my opinion. You know what I mean?
They were so good live, so fun live. You never knew what you're going to get. Like, I've seen them perform, and then Chuck Mosley would just be like, oh, hey, what's up? You guys want to do you want to do some stuff with the guy from Dog Fashion Disco? We'll do a Faith No More. I saw that. Some of the cooler times, some of the cooler shows. It was a more of a laid back, definitely not a 216 vibe. Until they would do like Convictions or something, which ended up being like a State of Conviction song with Dwid. And oh wow. I Unified Culture was the band that I kept going back and forth with State of Conviction, but I was like, Unified Culture was so integral. I have more nostalgia for that one, because I had access to Unified Culture before I had the access to State of Conviction. That one was like, wasn't until later on that I was like able to find it. And once again, Craig Martini, man, like he ran that band.
Another little story for, I forgot to mention with State of Conviction earlier. Actually, State of Conviction's CD release party was at the Fantasy, and 216 did like five songs as an opener for it. Oh, so you got both bands the same. Yeah, so the State of Conviction album came out. I remember going to it with a couple buddies of mine. I was like my little crew that I went to shows with early in the 90s. And we saw Skinny there. We're like, oh, what are you doing here? He's like, oh, 216 is playing tonight. We're like, what? So you got five 216 songs earlier in the night, and the State of Conviction was the headliner for the CD release. Like, talking about a slamming show, you know what I mean? You got Bo two for one that night, and you know, it was like $8 back then, you know what I mean? You're like,
right,
you know, and the CD was $10, so you spent $20, maybe a t-shirt, and you got to see some of the most legendary sets ever. It was great. It was one of the coolest CD release parties I've ever been, you know, seen before.
Fuck yeah, dude. All right, what do you got next on your list?
It's another one of those situations where Jason Popsin did a single album. The band has several albums, but he did a single album with them, and it's In Cold Blood, Hell on Earth. That record is 30 minutes of pure brutal fucking kick your teeth in. I mean, it's an amazing lineup. It's got The Melnick brothers from Integrity. It's got Blaze from Integrity, and he's still doing In Cold Blood now. And he was also in One Life Crew back in the day. And then there's a dude named Rich Ferjanik on drums, and he ended up being in Run Double Run and a couple other projects. And then Jason Popson on vocals. And don't get me wrong, I like the other In Cold Blood records. The guy Bourbon, who was a singer before and after, and then now they actually have a friend of mine, Chops, singing on it. And now they're still actively a band. But that lineup and that record, it came out on Victory as well. That In Cold Blood Hell on Earth album to me is one of my favorite, like top 10 albums as well. Not even just a Popson, but a top album. It's also one of my favorite hardcore records. Yeah, it's fucking brutal. I don't know if you've ever heard the whole album, but it literally, it's amazing. And I remember when I was touring with Shroom one time, we went to like Rhode Island or something, and we're loading in. It's like 02, 03, early years of me touring with them. And like, you know, they're like, we just did Ozfest or something, 02. And we're doing like our own tour. And these like kids, not Mushroom Head looking fans, kids are kind of standing out by the back of the bus. And these dudes are like, yo, is Jason Popson on the bus? And I was like, yeah. They're like, yeah, like we just found out that that dude's like the singer of In Cold Blood, and like we're like super hardcore, like Clevo hardcore fans, and like we brought our vinyls and wanted to know if he'll sign them and shit. Like these dudes just came out, found out the guy from In Cold Blood was on, you know, like, fuck Mushroom Head, you know what I mean? Like we want the In Cold Blood signature. So yeah, like it, and it's really big amongst the hardcore community too. Like I mean, like a lot of like old school hardcore dudes are like, yeah man, that's one of the greatest records, you know. And it's like, it just, it, it's brutal, man. And it has that Integrity sound because it's the Melnick brothers, you know what I mean? And then it has that Jason Popson fucking pure fucking, you know, evil, man. I mean, he just, he's one of the most pissed vocalists ever, dude. And it has his amazing lyrics too. I mean, you know, he's a great writer. I love his writing style because he almost leaves songs open to your own interpretation sometimes, so people really can identify with the lyrics. But at the same time, like when he's hitting a point, you know what he's saying. And like, it's just, in my opinion, one of the coolest hardcore albums ever. Legendary hardcore album, in my opinion.
You know, I didn't even get hip to the fact that he did that, he did that record with In Cold Blood until I want to say like 5 years ago.
Oh, right.
But that's also a testament to how much stuff the, you know, how much this guy works and how much this guy is stupid, creating things left and right. But I've always been aware of In Cold Blood. I've seen In Cold Blood. I saw them just a few years ago out here in Akron and stuff. And somebody even said, that's actually when somebody was like, oh, is Popson singing with them?
Right.
And I was like, why would Jason Popson come to this club? And they got me hit, like sent me the link. And then, so as a fan, it's one of my favorite things to find stuff that you didn't know existed. And now you have it. And so, yeah, I have that record now. Fucking love that album. There didn't make my list.
Cool.
But that's what makes this interesting. You know, it's just the fact that it's like, once again, so many things. Like I went and did the Wikipedia search on the guy, and I was just like, I haven't heard of like, you know, half these, but of course he's doing all of the, you know. And I feel like that I'm like the biggest Jason Popson mark there is. Like I wrote like silly songs on the podcast and shit, you know, just like, just being like a stand to the guy. But like, it's that's a dope pick. I wasn't sure if you were going to pick that one or not, but I'm going to go back and listen to that now, because yeah, I agree. It's like, as far as hardcore albums go, it's just, there's nothing the guy can't do. It's really cool. It's really cool when you bust out something like that and you're like, well, he's in Mushroom Head. And a lot of people that listen to hardcore, they don't see Mushroom Head, you know, in the same light. It's a completely different scene. And so the fact that he's able to kind of transcend and cross genres and be so respected in all of the little sub scenes throughout Cleveland, like, I just think that's really fucking cool. That's
the first time I saw them. A little piece of history was, it was one of the Spud Monsters' last show or whatever at the Odeon, and they had like the old school Joe Gizmo guys. They did like a 3-hour set. It was crazy. And In Cold Blood opened up, and I remember going and I see Pops walking around in this ATF windbreaker, and I'm like, oh, you're here for the show? He's like, oh, it's a band that I just did, you know, it's a band that I joined, and we're doing an album with In Cold Blood, we're opening up. And I'm like, cool. And then the In Cold Blood guys get up there, and it's like, you know, the Integrity guys, and I'm like, holy shit, you know what I mean? And I'm like, and they just play the whole album, like a 30-minute set, and they just fucking kick your teeth in. And I'm like,
oh,
dude, I was like, this is amazing. You know what I mean? I had no idea they were even playing. I had no idea who the fuck they were. And then I found out they had previous albums and shit. And I, you know, picked up the vinyl, just being the, you know, the true fan of anything I get my hands on as a kid. I bought every fucking record from every merch booth. You know what I mean? And
yeah.
Yeah. I would just, it was the same thing. I had no idea. Like I just see, you know, this guy. And at that time, you know, like, you know, I was just a kid in the crowd, but like, I talked to the guy enough, you know, I always wanted to see, what's up, dude? You know, what the fuck are you doing here? You know, just coming to see the Spuds. He's like, oh no, I'm playing. And I was like, another fucking band. You know what I mean? And at that time I started realizing, I'm like, is every time I go to a show, this guy's gonna play in a band. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
Every time. So yeah, it was cool, man. So it's definitely one of those things where you're right. Whenever he does so much, it's like, you, like, you know, even like for me, like I, and you know, knowing him personally and being around him, you know, for so long, it took me years before I heard Bitch Wrangler, which is not on my list, but it's one of his other bands. I had heard of it, but then like I forgot about it, and somebody played it, and I'm like, what is this? Sounds like Jason. Oh, that's his band, Bitch Wrangler. I'm like, I forgot he even had that band. He has so many projects that you forget about how many fucking bands he's in. You know what I mean?
Right.
So, yeah.
Right. Absolutely. Dan Call told me a deal that he said that when Popson's bands were all like all active, and he was playing Peabody's and selling out Peabody's with whatever band you throw at the dartboard, right? He said that they actually had a time card for Jason. So if 216 is playing, he would clock in. Like, that's right. How popular he was at Peabody's. And I was like, he's like, you know, he would just kind of like just come in and just be like a regular employee at that point. I was like, damn, that's ultimate clout. All right, I got a pick for you that I don't know. I don't know if it's on your list or not, but I had to pick them just because the first album, I think there's two records with this project. I know there's at least two, but the first album from 10,000 Cadillacs.
Yeah, that was my last one on the list.
Yeah, kid.
Yeah.
Them Cadillacs are back.
We're doing this Cleveland style.
Cleveland style.
Once again. It's 10,000 Cadillacs, bringing it straight from the heartland, from the heart and all that.
Heartland, yeah.
Show some love, let's get them up.
Get your groove.
We got static in the front and there's panic in the back. If you challenge me again, then my pen will attack. Cadillacs multiply, 10,000 will be right. Correct it when you're wrong, get gone. Now say goodbye, you see, I'm still on top. This is my spot to rock, and the shit won't stop. Don't bother checking the clock. Give me a few ticks and I'll drop the top. While skinny got my back like Captain Kirk, I miss a spot. Block to block, block. Shame if you're jumping in the drop, I play a hitter. If I catch him cock blocking, this game can't be contained. I maintain my brain while you strain the hands till my style remains. Got leather interior.
That is one of my favorite things of all time. Was in the late 90s going to shows, right? And you know how, like, in between bands, you would hear music playing.
Yep.
And they were so smart in their marketing and the way that they branded themselves, right? That you would hear this rap beat playing. And you would hear a voice that you're like, that sounds like J-Man.
Right.
And, you know, it's just like, it was so funny because, like, he had like three different pitches. Like, he would pitch down, like, yeah, kid. And then he'd have the, like, yeah, what up? But you knew that it was all Jason Popson, right? Yeah. Just because he's got something to his voice that's very identifiable.
He's got his own swagger, man. He's got a swag. He's got his own swagger. You know what I mean?
He has an accent that's only his, right. You know what I mean? Right. It's absolutely. Just like, it's like, oh, that is the accent of the coolest motherfucker I've ever seen.
Right.
And so that was another thing for like a long time. I wanted to get my hands on this music, but it was the late 90s. I wasn't like a Cleveland kid. I would have to go take the 45 minute drive every week.
Right.
But like, I would hear Pimp, and I would hear, you know, like the Get Gone, and something about that, like, still to this day, I will bump that freaking, I have it on CD. I will bump that shit and just be like, a pimp, a player, the Mac, the mayor, doing the whole thing. Cause once I finally got the CD, it was just game over. And completely unironically, me and my best friend at the time, Brian, we would ride around in his Honda Civic with all the windows down, just blaring the shit out of that, driving through the neighborhood. Like, this was the dopest hip hop I've ever heard in my life. And, but like I said, it was like a thing that you would hear in between like sets, and it was just like, by the time that I got the CD, I already knew every word because you would hear it so much.
Yeah, absolutely.
So why did you pick 10,000 Cadillacs? I'm so glad that you did, because I think they're doper than fuck.
They have three releases. They have Be My Guide, which is the second release that had the Busy Bone track, Jason. And then they did the last album with, which I feel terrible because the title of it is, I can't put it on, got to forgive me. I just got over COVID too, so I got brain fog.
There we go.
Being very forgetful. The third record is the one with Just Mike on it. And that's the one they put out, I'd say about 10 years now. They put out, it was the third album, it's Skinny Jason. And then there's the, you know, the MC from around Cleveland, Just Mike. He's the second or third member of 10,000 Cadillacs now. And that's who they played with. They played a bunch of live shows with that lineup. Why I picked it was same thing, man. I heard it in the crowd a lot. And I was like, man. And I remember, you know, talking to the guys and they're like, oh yeah, it's our rap project. And then Skinny spoiled me all my life. He burns me a CD one time when I was out at the studio. And that's before I, you know, worked with him. I used to go out there and just hang out. Like I literally, I was like 17 years old. I would just 17, 18 years old. I would just go out to North Royalton. I'd hang out with Skinny while he was mixing and mastering whatever project they were working on. Sit there, smoke a Marlboro Reds with us back when he smoked them, you know, I smoked and we'd just sit there and he would just always like, check these tunes out, man. And I'd be hanging out and then he'd be like, here's a CD. Don't give it to anybody. And then I'm like, I'm the fucking coolest kid in the world. So I used to have like multiple CDs of like different mixes of all these unreleased tracks. You know what I mean? So I knew every fucking song before it came out. I knew all the shit, you know, and it was just cool because I grew up, obviously I'm a huge fan of hip hop. You know what I mean? I've always have been. And when I, you know, I started off, I wanted to do like, you know, rap metal, like everyone wanted to, like, you know, I just love hip hop. And they were in my constant rotation, man, before the album even came out. Cause I had the, you know, the burnt CD and they were just literally like, it just literally was just one of those things. It was like, can these dudes not do, you know what I mean? Like at that time I was, you know, diehard Mushroomhead fan, you know, that was my life. And then, you know, 216. And it's like, I love all these projects. And then the fucking guy does a rap album. And I'm like, dude, and it's fucking cool. It's fun. Right. It's lyrically intelligent. The beats are amazing. You know what I mean? It's so different. He's doing all three voices. Like how the fuck can this guy do? This dude just does everything. You know what I mean? And it's just so dope.
It sounded like he was having the time of his life doing that.
Yeah,
like, absolutely. Like I love hearing albums where you know somebody's in the studio like laughing at what they did because they're like, no, we just do it. Just fuck yeah. Like it was so simple too. It was such a simple record. You know what I mean? Like it wasn't overproduced, it was just this perfect
cool.
Right. Yeah, it was fucking cool. So does that mean I picked all five of your bands then? We have like
no, In Cold Blood and I'm done with my list now, but In Cold Blood and State were the only difference, and then we had 216 Unified and 10K were our matches. Little story about 10K, because I like to give, you know, a little bit of my insight on it. Was Skinny told me a story. When he started doing those beats, he used to actually have to sample with like cassette tapes and different shit because it was such an early time of sampling. Mm-hmm. That he would, like, you know, he was like playing like loops off of tapes and like all, like it was the most janky, like rigged up way he was sampling when he started, like the earliest, like Kicking Up Dust and stuff. All that shit's like crazy, like tape samples and stuff that he would like get from stuff and record it like off of like records and shit. And he told me like these crazy stories how like that kind of started off as just like a joke. And then he's like, you know, because he had like Detroit Avenue and he would do like, you know, different like hardcore techno and stuff. And then he started just making beats for fun and he was just like, I know who will do this with me. Jason will. And yeah, you know, do you know what I mean? So it was like one of those kind of things where like 10K was just like this idea. He's going to make rap beats. And then all of a sudden he's like, all right, let's do it. And they started a project. You know what I mean? And it's pretty crazy. And I originally, the first thing I ever recorded, which never got released because we never finished all of it, was Skinny made a bunch of like rap beats for me back in like the late 90s, early 2000s. And I was recording some songs with him. It's one of the things I did. But we just, you know, around that time they got signed. And the record deal started coming around, and then, you know, Double X started coming about, and then just, you know, I mean, they got their Mushroom career to worry about, and we just never finished a record. But yeah, I mean, that dude's been making sick beats, and he's just been all about that life, you know, since the 90s, man. And this was kind of like Skinny's brainchild, and him and Jason used to, you literally just be the dynamic duo, and they would just do every fucking thing together, and it would just crush, you know. They've just been crushing together for years, you know, and it was a perfect match, you know. It was great. And that's why they're one of my favorites too, man, just because I've literally been bumping that shit since I was a teenager. Like my player was always like Bone Thugs, 10K, and people would be like, you know, and I play that shit for so many people because I mean I grew up on the east side of Cleveland, so it's like, you know, I was a bridge the gap for a lot of my neighbors for certain things, you know what I mean? I'd be hanging out with some of the thuggish, like real thug ass dudes bumping 10K, like check my dude's band out. And they'd be like, oh, this shit's raw. You know what I mean? So like I had the whole East Side bumping, you know, 10K in my neighborhood back in the day. So we'd have house parties. We're the crazy corner, you know, house on the corner, a bunch of dudes, bachelor pad, 18 years old, throwing ragers, bumping 10K out the window. So it's another one of those things for me that's like a real nostalgic piece of my childhood, man. Like, and that's why I was so glad they like put out an album, third album, and started doing shit with Just Mike and playing shows. So he's like, man, you guys got to play a show. And they're like, oh, it never happened. And then finally they're like, fuck it, we're going to start playing live shows. And I'm like, dude, you know, and it was just right. Like, you know, great. I felt like it was 10 years too late. You know what I mean? Like, not that it didn't do well, but if they would have done that shit, open up for themselves back in the day, like with Mushroom or something, because everybody knew those songs. Like you said, they played them between bands. You know, you're getting hyped. You're getting ready for Shroom to go on. You're hearing these fucking 10K songs bumping. You knew what it was. You know what I mean? If they would have played those shows back then, I think it would have crushed, you know, and I wish they would have. That's one of my biggest regrets. They never did. Or, you know, like I wish, one of my wishes that I'm sure they regret too, because I mean, dude, that shit was like a cult, you know, it was just a cult following. Everybody that went to Mushroom Head shows knew every word, and every song, because you heard it every time you went to a show, you know?
Oh yeah. And,
that's one of they're one of my favorites for sure. That's definitely one of the best projects in my opinion. And I love that band so much. And I was just so into what they were doing. I remember one time I was sitting at the house I was talking about where I lived at a bachelor pad, and the phone rings. And so my guitar player that I started Half Raised Heathens with, him and I lived upstairs and his parents lived downstairs. And I, you know, Skinny had my contact for both, because it was like pre-cell phone day. It was like pager day. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I didn't have my pager yet, you know, and he called my house and couldn't get a hold of me. So then he called the downstairs house, and, you know, my guitar player's mom's like, hey, there's Skinny's on the phone for her. I'm like, okay. So he's calling my guitar player's mom, and she lives downstairs. I'm like, what's up, dude? It's like, you know, late 10 o'clock at night. He's like, I got something you got to hear. He's like, you got to make it out to Royalton. And I'm like, what? He's like, we just recorded a track with Busy Bone, and he knows what to die. You know what I mean? So like, I'll never forget that moment. Like, here's my dude calling me, telling me about, he's fucking stoked and geeking because they just recorded a track with Busy Bone. And I'm like, on my way. So I just went fucking straight to North Royalton at 10 o'clock on like a Monday. And he just had to play the track for me. And it was the fucking rawest shit ever, man. Those dudes were so pumped, and they told the story about, you know, the whole experience for years. That was like their high for years. They're like, dude, Busy Bone just rolls in, smoking blunts with the aunt. You know what I mean? Like, it was such a cool thing. I was so happy for those dudes too, because they're like huge Bone Thugs fans too. And then, you know, and they were just doing this hip hop album, just really trying to do it. And then they just get one of the fucking best of all time, a legend, to come out and do a song with them. And it was like the coolest shit ever, man. It definitely was.
Yeah, that song went hard as fuck, dude.
Yeah.
Out. I just want to listen to some Mushroom Head. Chill.
Poof. Yeah, what? Kid.
Holy shit, you're J-Man from Mushroom Head 216 Unified Culture. I grew up on your music.
Gonna help you fix your computer.
Amazing. It keeps crashing when I'm trying to play one of your songs.
Did you drop it from the top? Let the motherfucker stop?
No, if I drop it, it'll break.
Yeah, kid. Twist the 4-5 cap to get rap.
Not even sure what a 4-5 cap is, but...
Maybe try to tight slap the wax and the wheels to feel all right.
There's actually no wheels on the computers.
Find the flow, freak the funk like you're in heat.
In heat like a dog?
No doubt. Now wrap the leaf, strike the blunt, now you're in deep.
Getting high is not going to help. That's pretty crazy.
Don't the no loco go cuckoo for my Cocoa Puffs?
These are all just Mushroom Head lyrics, aren't they? You're amazing, dude.
Well, I'm a pimp, a player, the Mac. The mayor.
Funky rhyme saying, make you want to say.
Yeah, all fixed.
Oh, wow. That worked. Thanks, dude.
Yeah, kid. Cleveland. Here's my business card.
I'll hold on to that.
Never let it go. Yeah, kid. Poof.
And he disappeared. And my computer's gone. What the fuck just happened?
Yeah, but it was cool, man. I'll never forget the phone rings. I'm like, why the fuck is Skinny calling me? I thought something bad happened. He's like, no, man, just recorded a song with Busy Bone. You need to get your ass out of here. And I'm like, word, I'm on my way. Like, so, yeah. Yeah, man, that's what I, you know, so that for me, like, it's one of those albums too. It has a lot of personal, those first two records. I mean, I love the third record. I love Just Mike. He's a good friend of mine. One of the most talented artists I've ever met. But those first two Caddies albums are like, literally, like, I hear those records and it just takes me back to like a moment in life. Like, it's a part of my, you know, growing up. It's part of my upbringing. You know what I mean? Especially in this music scene, man. Like, it's really was a part of my upbringing. Like, those dudes and their projects and the shows and the love they showed me, like, really honestly, like, made me who I am now. Not even as a person, because they're my friends. The guys have always been like family to me. But like, I would have never been as balls deep in the scene, and like, I never would have picked up a microphone or ever started a band if it wasn't for those dudes, because of the shit they put out, and then just them always being like, "Yo, start a band, you can do it. Anybody can do it." You know, like, they were always really encouraging of me and my music career. You know what I mean? And that's like, you mentioned earlier, like, what he's done so much for the Cleveland scene. Like, that dude has turned so many people onto bands. Like, you know, I heard Schnauzer for the first time because Jason Popson put Schnauzer on one of their shows. I heard Ringworm, which is one of my favorite bands, for the first time because Jason Popson said, "Have you ever heard this album, Ringworm, by the Promise by Ringworm?" I'm like, "No." He's like, "Check it out." Like, you know, that dude just, he was one of those guys, just like Jim Kanya, you know, rest in peace, was if it was good and it was Cleveland, he would tell everyone about it and he would spread the music and he would give people like, "Yo, man, here's a copy," or "Check these dudes out." Like, he's just a walking encyclopedia of music that would always tell his friends and other people and fans about like this band, that band. And, you know, the dude just spread Cleveland, man. I mean, he literally, when I think of Cleveland music, especially in the 90s, I think of Jason Popson and all his projects, because that dude literally brought so many different bands together, so many different genres together. And like, you know, bands you never would have heard of if he didn't have them on his show. You know what I mean? And that's the truth. You know what I mean? Not a lot of people, not that I would never listen to Schnauzer, but like, I didn't know who Schnauzer was until I see him opening up for, you know, one of Jason's bands. And I'm like, and he's fucking standing side of the stage, bobbing his head, fucking, you know, smiling ear to ear. And you're like, all right, fucking, now I know why this band's on this show. This guy loves him. You know what I mean? It's just one of those things. He would bridge that gap for a lot of artists. And it was cool, man. He definitely is a major part of this scene for sure.
I want to give him an honorable mention for his appearance on Beat the Dealer with Schnauzer.
Yeah, hey, fuck face, never made. I'm the asshole of the heaven. They're looking for your magic to keep me high forever. Hear the scream for my sin. They got me doing tricks and taking different measures to watch your fucking fall and see you lose it all with burning fucking pleasure. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
If they would have done an album of all of that, that would have made my list. That would have been number one on my list.
Right.
That's a good song. Dude, and to your point too, as far as like his influence, like me, I have no ins with those guys. I, like I said, you know, just always just a fan of the music and the scene, loved going to it. Two little things. One, I knew that I wanted to try to be in a band, because I wanted to open up for 216 in Measurement. That was my goal. And the first time I ever got to do anything on a microphone was at a 216 show. And he saw me singing the lyrics to a song and he put the microphone in my fucking face. And I tried to yell and I could hear myself going back and my voice was cracking, cause I was like 16. My voice is cracking and I'm nervous and I sounded like shit, but the entire ride home, me and my dudes, we just kept talking about how he handed me the microphone and I didn't forget the words. And we were like, that was so cool. That was so cool. Like, he saw right. you. And like, and I think we told the same story like 20 times on the trip home, just like, he saw you singing and he was like, "Dad, yeah, you know it." And I was like, yeah, we were looking at each other and you know, I really want to somehow try to be a part of this, like this world right. is for me. And then a second mini story is 216 played a show in Akron a long time ago. My band got to fucking open up and that was, you know, like done. That was how I knew I was done making music, because I already hit my goals. So 216, they my friend, he was actually our bass player, he has 216 tatted on the back of his neck.
That's awesome.
And we got really, really drunk. And we were watching 216, you know, their headline, and J-Man makes this comment. He goes, he's like, "Normally we're 216, but tonight we're 330, because that's our area code, right?" Right. My dude broke down in tears like a little bitch and just started bawling, bro. Bawling. Dude, like, I shit you not. He was like, he was so happy. You know, that they came to our neck of the woods and he said that. And
right, right.
Like, like we had to calm him down, you know.
I used to say J-Man for president back in the day because he would especially like Mushroom Head days, the early days when he would just give like the fucking speeches on stage and he would just like make you feel like, you know, everyone outside those doors, famous lines outside those doors, you know, fucking that's not us. We're like a team in here. Like you left and you're like, he'd make you feel like this motherfucker could run for president and you'd vote for him because he would just literally speak to you, especially when you're like an angsty teenager who's angry as fuck about everything anyways. And this dude's just telling you, you're a part of this crazy freak family. You know what I mean? And like, he always had cool shit to say too, man. Like, you know, and like, that was the stage persona, man. Like his whole personality, the swag, the just like the fucking like domination of like, you know, like he fucking owned the crowd. And you'd walk away, especially when, like I said, when I was a kid, I used to be like, dude, if I ever sing on stage, I want to work a crowd like that. And that's why he's one of the people that I learned how to work a crowd from, just like, you know what I mean? Just like the interaction with the crowd in between bands, or like, dude just had the whole package, man. Like, you know, he knew how to fucking put 2,000 people in his hands. You know what I'm saying? And it's like, and you always left like you felt like you belonged to something. That's where the whole Mushroom Head thing came in, was like a, such a family cult feeling almost. You know what I mean? And especially in the 90s, early 2000s, like everybody knew everybody. Everybody had relationships somehow. And I mean, today, to this day, I still have some of my closest relationships in life because of those shows. I mean, I'm married. Absolutely. I met my wife at a Mushroom Head show. You know what I mean? So it's like, you know, and it's just one of those things. It was always this, was this environment where you felt like you belonged. And that's what made it. And other people on the outside would be like, I never get it, man. The music's not that good or whatever. You know what I mean? There's always been the critics, you know, the metal guys. But then it's like they would go to the show and they'd be like, I can see why you go to all these shows, dude, because everybody's just having fun and they're all part of something. You feel like you're actually a part of something. Like you're part of the show. You know what I mean? And that's what was cool. And he was the ringleader of that fucking circus. And that's what always made you go, this fucking guy's the real deal. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
And,
yeah,
and it's funny that you say that. Was that a voodoo show that you're talking about? The first
it was.
Yeah, I was there. Yeah. I remember. Hell yeah. I totally remember you guys playing now that I think about it. Because I was trying to think, I'm like, that had to be voodoo or whatever it was fucking called at the time. Because it was like, I remember there's multiple different names. What was it called before voodoo? I can't remember.
Ron's Crossroads.
That's what it was. All right. Yeah. I could not remember to save my life. Yeah. I played there a couple times and I was always like, it's like you get on stage and you're like, this place looks way fucking smaller, you know, when you're on the floor. But then you get up there in front of people and you're like, there's actually a lot of people in their asshole to elbows. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
That little place could pack some fucking people in for sure. But yeah, man, I mean, the dude, like, you know, he knew how to make you feel like you're a part of the show for sure. And I'm not surprised your dude cried because, you know, he fucking that was the man. And he said, fucking 330. And there it was, you know, like, yeah, that's a great story, though. That's an awesome story.
He was also like 8 shots of tequila deep. So, you know, well, yeah, there was a lot going on. I'm
surprised he had his clothes on. You know, that's my problem. I can't drink tequila. I get butt ass naked. Just, you know, but yeah, that's great. That's awesome. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, I had a feeling our lists were going to be pretty close to one another. At least I figured at least 3, which we were right. We both had 3. So
the two that I have that did not make your list.
Let's get to those. Sorry.
I got Integrity 2000, this record. So Integrity, the most iconic Cleveland hardcore band of all time. 100%. 100%. There's, you know, look at any, you know, every other Igor Cavalera picture. He's wearing this shirt, man. Like, right. Like Integrity is so, like, they're the real deal. And, you know, Dwight is no stranger to experimentation. He has no fear to do stuff that is outside the norm. They made this record that had Jason Popson and Dwid singing. You had, you know, once again, to the relationship with Craig Martini on bass. You got Skinny on the drums and you got Gravy doing that 216 crazy Gravy, who's one of my favorite 7-string players ever. Right. The shit that guy wrote for Runt and 216. absolutely bonkers. And Integrity 2000, I had to put on the list just because it's such a neat collab album. It's a little harder to find out there. But I still have my CD from, you know, the past 20 plus years. So I wanted to put them in there just because I highly recommend anybody that's never heard it to, you have to go listen to it.
Beginning
to end. There's no filler, really. You know what I mean? Like, it is just a fucking, it is a killer album where you get to have the experience of Popsin and Dwid. And it's, you know, it's some groovier shit for Dwid. I mean, you know, there's groove and stuff in Integrity, but like, it's gravy and skinny.
Right.
It's a different, and then you got you add Craig Martini into the rhythm section, and it's just like it's an album that it's probably for me what the In Cold Blood record is for you. Like, it's it's just one of my favorite albums, period. And so I wanted to put Integrity 2000 in there and give them a little bit of love.
Yeah, it's a great record. It's a super awesome record. It's such a crazy thing too, because, you know, it's like one of those things where like diehard, like hardcore Integrity fans hate it, honestly. Like,
oh yeah,
they make fun of it. They're like, oh, this fucking album's trash. And then, like, you know, those guys make jokes about it too sometimes. But like, overall, like, what a cool concept. You have some of the coolest players and you have legendary Dwid on vocals, you know what I mean? And it's a great record. That was one of the records that I was teetering on. Like, do I put it as a runner-up? Because I was gonna say, if we did runner-ups, I was gonna say Integrity 2000, if we were allowed. That was actually gonna be my runner-up. It's on there. It says
I have a couple of runner ups too.
And it was definitely one of those things where it was like, I really like that album. But these, you know, those other albums that I list in bands were just like, you know, the cream of the crop to me. But it's such a cool record. It's one of those records where if I find it on disc still randomly, I'll buy it. So I have like three copies of it, and I have like two copies of the vinyl because it's hard to find. And I'm a fucking nerd like that, where I'm like, oh shit, man, these are hard to find. Even though I have three of them at home, I'm gonna buy a fucking another copy. You know what I mean? So. And I remember one time being on the road with those guys. They were doing a show at the Metro in Chicago. We went to a record store next to the door, and there was like two copies of it. And Skinny bought one and I bought one just because it was there. We're like, oh, we're just going to fucking buy Integrity 2000 copies. Fuck it. Boop, boop, you know, like, because you have to, because it's such a hard album to find nowadays, you know. And great record. I'm glad you put that on the list. I'm glad that it got mentioned, because I'd feel really bad if we didn't mention it today.
I also have Pitch Black Forecast.
Great band. Really hard not to
ask them. It's in almost impossible to find.
Right.
Like, holy shit. Like, trying to find that. There was a period where YouTube was like, we're not even giving it to you. And I was like, I need to hear this fucking super group of a band, because he has personally, like, my favorite, one of the most influential metal drummers of all time. You know, we're talking Death, Strapping Young Lad, Gene Hoagland, man.
Yeah.
And then not only that, one of my favorite local bands ever that had some of the greatest riffs was NDE. And they
absolutely
you get Rob Reinhard to come in, and it was Rock Horse, right, on the record. Was it Steve playing bass, or was
Craig was on the first album?
Okay.
And then Tom Schaffner and Steve joined. Yeah.
And so having the mix of the NDE style, because it just, you know, I've said it a million times, just such an underrated band.
They're amazing. They're such a great fucking band. It's one of those things too, like, definitely underrated, because that's one of those bands I feel like if they would have just had opportunity to hop on and do like, be an opener on just one of the fucking bigger metal bands of the 90s or something, you would still be like, they would still be touring on their own, and they'd be headlining fucking, you know, theaters everywhere, because they just, such a creative band too. Indie fucking rules, man. They're definitely one of my favorite bands that ever came out of the state of Ohio for sure.
Yeah, they were so dark and so groovy. It's just and nasty at the same time. Like, it was just like an NDE show was it was very similar to like a 216 atmosphere.
Oh yeah.
And but then it's once again Gene Hoagland, man. Gene Hoagland, I think the song, I think the songwriting on the As the World Burns record, I believe that's what it was. Like, just Jesus Christ, that Lighthouse song.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, it's like, oh, there's the catchiness to it. But like, it's another one of those things where it's just like, oh yeah, that's right. Popsin did that. And but like, yeah, I gotta tell people, like, go listen to that fucking record. If you like metal, go out and I think it, you know, just everything from the drumming to the guitar, it's such a neat mashup. And I wish they would have like stuck. I wish they would have stuck with it, because I think that band would be just dominating the scene right now if that, you know. But I understand. Apparently Gene Hoagland's busy.
Right. It's so tough. I mean, you've got the Swiss Army knife of heavy metal drums, you know what I mean? And it's like, he's got to get called upon by so many people. It's like, you know, you almost knew out the gates, you're like, man, this would be great if this band could just be a regular thing, but you kind of knew it wasn't going to be, Gene Hoagland is like, Gene Hoagland is the Eric Matthews of the rest of the world. Cause I don't know if you know Eric Matthews, right? Drummer Eric Matthews. Eric Matthews is in 6 bands currently. He's been in at least 50 bands since I've known him. He was a drummer for later version of Unified, later version of State of Conviction. He was a drummer, Spud Rogers. That dude literally like is in like every fucking band. Every time I turn around, I'm like, oh, this, my buddy's like, got a new band. Eric Matthews is my drummer. It's like,
yeah,
correct. That's Gene Hoagland internationally. Eric Matthews is, you know, our Ohio Gene Hoagland. Gene Hoagland fills in for everyone else around the world. So, and that's what sucks. I mean, you know, because that band literally, if they would have just kept doing albums and they could have toured more, like, I feel like Pitch Black would be one of those bands that everyone's talking about, you know, in the metal community, because they have such cool tunes, man, and they have such a cool lineup of writers. Just fun. I mean, the songs are heavy and fun. And their first show at Peabody's is still one of my favorite metal shows. I remember when they did their first, you know, show at Peabody's, and it was just like, you know, it was just so fucking brutal, because I had heard a couple tunes, that's it at that point, and then just to see that lineup on stage together, if I could play their, you know, show together, like, they were great. They were fun. Like, you know, same kind of like in like environment, like you're talking about, like a 216 NDE, like just brutal pit, super fucking heavy, a lot of fun. It was just, it's honest metal. I mean, that's just a metal band. It's an honest metal band, and they fucking shred, they rip. And it was really hard not to put them on the list for sure. Absolutely.
Yeah. I went back and forth and I was like, no, it's definitely like, I definitely need to bring this band up because yeah, people.
Do you have the absentee? Do you have the first absentee album?
Yeah. 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 Okay. Yeah.
I was going to say, because I actually have a spare copy of that if you didn't have
it. Oh, shit. Yeah, no, I got that.
I was going to offer it up to you. I have a sealed copy of it, and I'm one of those guys, too. I'm way better now than I used to be. I used to be, I have to have 2 copies, one to open and one to keep closed, because I'm just like that with everything, dude. I'm a fucking collector, you know? So.
Oh, yeah, 100%. Same here.
What a great list, man. Yeah, I dig your list. I'm glad that you added those two bands, because Pitch Black definitely was... I was teetering. I was actually wearing a Pitch Black shirt yesterday, and I like made my list, and I felt like I cheated on him. I'm like, you're fucking wearing the shirt. You're not even putting them on your list, bro.
Right. You know what I mean? So, you have any honorable mentions?
Well, the Integ album was my honorable mention. Obviously Altar Boys.
That was my honorable mention. So
yeah, because it was such a cool idea. The concept of that and the era that came out in. Because I love Dog Fashion Disco, and those guys are great dudes. And Todd's a fucking awesome vocalist and awesome human being. And just the collaboration of some of my favorite musicians, you know what I mean? Like, I love those first, like, I mean, I still like Dog Fashion and all their projects, but like those first couple Dog Fashion albums were like, I love those albums so much. I used to travel. I mean, I remember going in the snowstorm to fucking the Flying Machine in Lorraine to see those guys, you know, I mean, like the first time I had ever heard them, like, you know, and like I had heard the CD, kind of got hit to them. Rick Thomas, actually, from Mushroomhead and Madonna, he was like, yo, check this band out. He actually turned me on the Dog Fashion. And then him and I like went to like Lorraine in the snowstorm to go see him. You know, those first couple Dog Fashion albums were like, really, they're to me were like if Mr. Bungle and Faith No More got put in a blender, and there you go. You know what I mean?
That's oh,
what
yeah. I always-
That's how I feel about Altar Boys. It has a little bit of Surfer, a little bit of Mr. Bungle California in it. You know what I mean?
Like, I was gonna bring up that comparison. I was like, they were listening to California, like, we can do this shit. Like, which if you're gonna be influenced, I always say be influenced by the best. And so I heard that and it had the exact same kind of vibe to it. And to your point about Dog Fashion Disco, that early stuff, 9 to 5 at the morgue is still in a fucking rotation. Like it still gets me. Like I hear it and I'm like I'll be jamming and my kids are like, what the fuck are you doing? And I'll be like, it's a green light. You're right. You know, but like, yeah. Awesome. dog fashion didn't they like they became like Polka Dot Cadaver or something for a good while, like just split off
and that's one of their side projects. Polka Dot's actually playing Lakewood soon. I'll drop a little plug for them. I can't remember the fucking date or I would do it properly, but look it up. They're at the Foundry. They're playing soon. I'm really bummed that because Dog Fashion was doing like a yearly weekend for a while and that got canceled last year. I was really bummed about that. But this year, I mean, I'm pretty sure Dog Fashion will probably be their weekend later in the year now that COVID's relaxed a little bit. But Polka Dots, I'm pretty sure it's June. I'm pretty sure Polka Dots playing in June or into May, but they're playing at the Foundry. They're great live. They're another great band. I fancy Dog Fashion more, but they're cool. I mean, it's, you know, a lot of the same guys and it's just, you know, that real, it's I think it's more of like a dark, depressing, melodic version of Dog Fashion is how I think Polka Dot Cadaver is, you know?
Hell yeah.
Yeah, they're a great band. I'm on like one of those, there's like a whole cult, mushroom cult group thing on Facebook that's dedicated to like El Creepo, which is another one of their bands, Polka Dot and Dog Fashion. And I'm in like this chat and this group thing. And it's cool because like everyone's like, it's another one of those like community things where everybody talks and everyone stays in touch and you like, you know, and the band guys are actually in there informing you shit and talking to people. So it's like a real hands-on cool thing. That's what's cool about the Dog Fashion guys. They're like real personable with their fans and they're like hands-on with people and they're just really cool dudes, man. And I've always loved those dudes. And that's why I was really excited that, you know, you got J-Man and you got Craig Martini and you got, you know, Eric Matthews, you got these dudes that I love and friends. They're jamming with this other group of dudes and what could this be? And then like, you know, like we'd mentioned, you got this like, you know, unofficial child of Mr. Bungle born called the Altar Boys, you know, and it was such a fucking cool album.
Land and tons, table dance for dollars while silicone soldiers wear massage fatigues.
I just played the whole song. Cry about it. All right, but back to the show.
And it was definitely, you know, that's another one of those albums. I think of that. I know exactly where I was in life. I remember things. It's another like piece of history for me because I can just hear those tunes and I'm like, I remember exactly where I was, what I was doing when I heard this the first time, you know?
And you can tell it's another one of those albums too. You can tell that they had fun. Like they had fun doing it. Yeah. Like there was a lot of, you know, there's no way he wasn't doing that, like the icebox locks and you can't cool without snapping his fingers and being all smiley.
Right. Right. And you wore a fucking Hawaiian shirt to the shows. That was the thing. Everybody wearing Hawaiians, everybody having a good time. You know what I mean? Yeah. Ryan Dunn's hanging out, fucking being Ryan Dunn, you know, rest in peace. You know, it's like, you know, it was just a cool thing. Like, you know, fucking hear the album. You're like, is that Ryan Dunn? You know what I mean? And then it's like, you know, and around that era too, like, because I worked at Peabody's then as well. You know, fucking randomly Jason Popsa would show up with like Wee Man and fucking, you know, Ryan Dunn and shit. And you're like, you know, just like around that era, because Ryan, you know, obviously, pretty sure Ryan's wife was from here. And so like, but, you know, just randomly, you just, you know, all of a sudden fucking Wee Man or some jackass guy or CKY guy will pop up at Peabody's because Jason Popson's hanging out partying with his buddies. You know what I mean? So there's a really cool era in history. Just random dudes that you see on TV or getting drunk. I remember one time Preston was at Peabody's. It was like a college ID night or something. He's fucking hammered there. And I'm just like, fuck, why is a guy from Jackass here? And then I realized Ryan Dunn's there. And it's like, all right, these guys are just fucking here in Cleveland, raging at Peabody's, you know, smelling the smells like everyone else. So it's like
another day in the life.
Yeah, it was a really cool era in Cleveland history too, with those guys around, and that whole band brought a lot of cool people together, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I loved it, man. That was a good record. And that was another one of those things too where I had a hard time not putting it on the list. But you know, I just, you know, the albums that I listed were just definitely an influence to me. It's kind of too, those albums were more like musical influence to me. And, but yeah, man, Altar Boards is great. I wish they would have done another record, but I know that respectively, they don't want to, you know, since Ryan's passing, it's kind of a respect thing for him. And they had talked about that too, like, you know, and they did that show a couple of years ago and, you know, there was maybe hope of them doing it, but, you know, doing a new album. And I just feel like if they would do a new album now, it'd be kind of cool if they revisited that, you know, X amount of years later, because I feel like that's one of those bands that could do an album every 10, 15 years and it would still just have the same impact that it was as before. You know what I mean?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I would definitely pull for that.
Yeah. It'd be great.
Well, dude, thank you so much for taking the time out of your day to just shoot the shit with me about a vocalist, about a guy that's made an impact in the music scene. And I don't think I don't think he necessarily gets all the credit that he fucking deserves, right. Because, you know, it's like we were talking about all the different sub scenes and things. He's one of those cats that, you know, I would see him at shows that he wasn't played. I saw him in line once at a Peeping Tom show. And I was like standing behind him and it was like 10 minutes of me like asking my wife if I should say hi to him or something, but I didn't. I was like, we're going to respect it. But I would see him at so many different shows, like, you know, it's like a Schnauzer show just randomly. And it's one of those things that I love to see somebody that can bring somebody together like that. And the guy's a mega fucking talent, and so I'm glad that I'm not alone and having the fandom of the Jason Popsin, and that his impact wasn't just me, because I have homies that have nothing but love and respect for the guy. And, you know, it's always like, I wish 216 was back together. I wish that, you know, State of Conviction was coming through. Like there's always, you know, every time that I hear about a Popsin show or like a reunion show, it's always the day of.
Yeah, right.
And so
I'll keep you in mind next time if I hear something. I'll let you know ahead of time, because I usually get the lowdown a little bit ahead of time. You know what I mean? So
you're my inside guy.
Yeah. Hopefully I'll have some new music for you from us too, man. I just to throw it off to you real quick. I started doing a new project with some guys, and I've been like, I've told you this multiple times, but every time I seem like I get a good lineup up, something happens. But this time we have a real solid lineup. I have jamming with Jeremy from the drummer that was in Brouhaha and Fistula. He's on drums. And then Trevor Love, world-known Trey Love, chef from The Foundry. And also he was in band Cholera and Fenian, bass player. And then I'm jamming with my buddy Tony Massey on guitar. And then we're calling it Oxjaw. And this is going to be straight Cleveland brutal hardcore metalcore. And it's just fucking, you know, where our goal is to have probably like an EP recorded by summer. And we're going to start playing some shows, get some t-shirts together, you know, some cool shit, some stickers, you know, give out some promo. So yeah, we're looking like, you know, end of summer, early fall, we're going to get the like a 5 or 6 song out and start playing shows. And maybe I'll fucking pester Jason Pops and see if we can get like a 216, not 216, sorry, that'd be great. But like a State of Conviction show or something. So this way we have somebody to open up for, you know what I mean?
Hell yeah.
Cause that would be great for us. Cause I swear, like every time I'm like in a band or put a project back together or something, like we always end up opening up for State of Conviction, one of our first shows back. And it's like, so if I could get them to do a show, it's a good sign. We'll be on track and we'll get to open up. You know what I mean? So
yeah.
Even if that'd be some good mojo, but yeah, dude, I mean, no problem. You don't have to thank you for having me, and thank you for giving a chance to talk about one of my, honestly, one of my best friends. And that's what's cool about it. He'll probably, you know, make fun of me for blowing him,
that's what we do here, Jason Pops. And we blow, yeah, we blow those that we love.
Yeah, no, and it's, you know, like I say, he's a good dude. He's not only a really talented motherfucker and one of the hardest working people I know, but he's a really good dude. And when he becomes a friend, he's a lifelong friend. And he's one of those guys that I don't have to see for 6 months. And then when I do, it's like we never fucking, you know, we never met, never skipped a beat, because he's just that guy. He's just that much of a consistent human being. And, you know, I owe the guy a lot because he's always supported my music. He's always gave my band shows. He's always put us on shows. You know, when I was young, like my second show ever was with HRH. We went by then with Half Raised Heathens was at Old Peabody's, Old River Road, right before it closed. Our second show ever, we opened up and Ringworm was on the show. God Below was a band from Syracuse, New York, who ended up becoming Brand New Sin years later, which Brand New Sin is a band that did like the Big Show and all that, like, Kiss theme song and shit. So and then it was God Below, Ringworm, and then 216 headline. And that was like our second show ever. And like, you know, I just said, hey man, my band, let's play a show. And they're like, okay, cool. And then our next show with Ringworm put us on the show. So I was really blessed, man. A lot of those guys really looked out for me over the years. And he's definitely one of them that introduced me to a lot of cool people. He introduced me to Dan Cole on a personal level. And Dan Cole's like, I'll book your band. You know, Jay's like, hey, you know, hook Fatback and his band up with some shows. And you know what I mean? Like he was like that. He's just that dude that always opened up a door and gave you an opportunity. And if you took the opportunity, it was always a great opportunity because you got to meet a lot of cool people and, you know, you got to actually do some cool shit and play some cool shows. And I owe him a big thank you for a lot of the shit he's done. And I've definitely told him, I'll keep telling him to the end of time, like, he definitely helped me and my band out and my whole career out, you know, when it comes to even playing out live. And if it wasn't for that dude and his mentorship, I probably would have never had enough balls to get on stage, because I used to be like, I don't want to sing in front of people. And then once I did it, I was like, this is the coolest fucking thing I've ever done in my life. I want to do it every day. So that's, you know, I owe him and Steve Felton as well, like, a big thank you for like giving me that push out the nest. You know what I mean? So, and it's cool that you're doing something like this. It's really cool that you're paying respect to a dude. Like I said, I definitely agree, he definitely doesn't get as much respect that he should, especially, you know, around town. And he's definitely a major part of this local scene, and it's like, you know, not only an entertainer but a mentor for sure. And it's cool that you did this. I'm really glad that you did something like this, and I'm honored to be a part of it, and I gotta say thank you for it. So
man, I had a blast, dude.
Right.
Always prepared for battle, like a motherfucking hell.
Cadillac, subscribe to the show, or don't, or whatever. I'm not your dad, or am I? Daddy Cadillac.